Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us. I'm here with Jonathan to answer your questions following our announcement this morning. Hopefully, you've all had a chance to watch the presentation that we published on our website this morning. I won't repeat what has been said there, but we'll just make a few opening comments. 2020 was a remarkable year for Flutter. We completed our merger with Stars Group in May, and in December, we accelerated our buyout to the minority shareholders in FanDuel, something we are very keen to do given the scale of the opportunity we see in North America. I'm pleased to say that our business is performing very well. The growth we are delivering is being built on sustainable foundations with significant recreational customer growth in all our key regions. Throughout 2020, our average monthly online players grew 19%, with that growth accelerating during the year. Average player growth globally was 32% in H2. Merger integration continues to progress well. You'll have seen that we have upgraded our cost synergy guidance this morning. As we said before, our number one priority is ensuring that the momentum in the business is not negatively impacted by integration work, but I'm pleased that we've been able to identify further efficiencies whilst maintaining strong momentum. Whilst performance in all of our regions has been strong, our ongoing leadership position in the US is particularly encouraging. We now believe the US market opportunity will be materially bigger than we previously estimated, with a TAM of $20 billion by 2025, while the returns profile we've highlighted this morning clearly shows the embedded value we're building in that business. 2021 has started well, and while our retail business is still being impacted by COVID-related closures, the strong underlying momentum in our online businesses is expected to offset this. And with that, I'll open it up for questions. In the interest of giving everyone the chance to ask a question, can I ask that you limit yourselves to two each in the first instance? And then if we have time, we'll be happy to answer any follow-ups you may have.
Thank you. Your first question is coming from Ed Young of Morgan Stanley.
Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ed.
Morning, both. Thank you for taking my questions. The first one is on your triple-step responsible gambling measures. I'm very struck by what you've done there. I guess that my question is that on a global basis, or is that largely in your legacy markets? I'm aware your tech platform is pretty across the US, and maybe that explains some of it. But are there any differences between your responsible gambling measures and steps across your global businesses, particularly regarding the US, given player values and spend appears to be so high there relative to some of the other markets? And then my second question is around the buyout of the FanDuel minorities. My understanding when that was done originally was that the exercise in the summer will continue to be a fair market value exercise. Obviously, since then, Fox has said that they'd be able to exercise the option at last private mark. So can you give a view on how you think that process is going to go in the summer? And if possible, I can add on a part B. Your sort of general view on the Fox assets, a lot of discussion about FanDuel, FanDuel brand, FanDuel returns. Any comment on the returns you're seeing in Fox in the US? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Ed. Well, look, I might just take them in reverse order. We're pleased with the way that the Super 6 asset has performed, you know, with nearly 4.5 million customers on that platform. It's clearly going to be a very valuable database for us to cross that into. Yeah, I've talked in the past over some of the struggles we're having with the quality of the product for FoxBet, which is something which is definitely hampering the ability for that business to get the traction it needs, and is a really good reminder for us of what it's like to be one of these subscale operators in America. Because we sometimes forget the difficulties they face when we look at the fantastic results that the FanDuel business is delivering as the number one player there in that market. In terms of the mechanism for dealing with Fox and the rights that we negotiated with them as part of the purchase or the deal we did with the Stars Group, we haven't put anything formal in place at this moment, but we will honour our commitment to give Fox an option to acquire 18.6% of FanDuel at fair market value in July 2021. To be clear on the valuation, Fox will have to pay the fair market value, which is different from the negotiated price agreed between Flutter and Fastball, which reflected the specific circumstances that Fastball found itself in. The valuation will be carried out in the same manner that would have occurred had Fastball still owned the stake. And as a reminder for those of you, two banks will value the business, and if the valuations are within a narrow enough range, the average of the two will be taken. And in the event that there's a wide disparity between the two valuations, a third valuer nominated and agreed by ourselves and Fox will value the asset, and whichever the first two valuations is furthest away from the third will be discarded, and then an average of the two remaining valuations will be taken. So that's the mechanism we use. In terms of your first question, look, we think that the approach we've taken to the triple step around affordability is important, and it's a important component of the race to the top that we're trying to engineer here in the UK from a safer gambling perspective. We aren't just confining ourselves to thinking about safer gambling in the UK there. You'll have seen, I'm sure, the recent announcements around the changes that we've made in the Irish market with regards to credit cards, as well as the restrictions on advertising. We've decided to do that on a unilateral basis, even without getting agreement from the other operators in the market. And safer gambling is something that's very important to us across the market, whether that's in sports betting in Australia or indeed in FanDuel in the US.
Thanks very much. Very clear on thoughts. Just a follow-up on the responsible gambling ones. Could you give us any kind of colour about where the current framework sits versus the UK or global market, or what ambitions you have to align it? Or is it just not as appropriate at this stage of the market, or is there any restriction in terms of technology, just in terms of your ambition for where you'd like to get it to and on what sort of timeline would be very useful?
Yeah, look, there are no restrictions from a technology perspective, but what I would say is that the concept of the framework whereby we assess customers when they join us, then we have sort of ongoing extensive monitoring of our online customers, and then have us interactions to help support customers is something which is is used for us all around the world. And actually we published some stats today. You can see that 40% of our Sky Bet customers, for example, already have a deposit limit in place. And within the Sir Paddy Power Betfair brands, those customers had interactions and then went on to put in place sort of deposit limits or sort of time outs on their account. So we believe the approach we're taking is working, and we'll I'm sure we'll find ways to continue to improve it in time. But we're pleased with it. It's helping support customers at this time.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Gavin Keller of Goodbody. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Jonathan. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Gavin.
Just on the US, could you give any comment around CPAs and how they're trending in H2 and into this year? Any comment on CPAs in the US? That's my first question. And my second question relates to the percentage of net revenue going through cost of goods sold in the US, obviously very high or much higher year in year, 46% in 2020. I presume that's a function of the high the relationship between net revenue and gross, and then Pennsylvania making up a much bigger mix of the US business in 2020. Could you just give us any sort of flavor on how you expect that to trend in 21 and 22 based on the states that you're seeing likely to launch in those years?
Good morning, Gavin. So look, in terms of the CPA data, look, we're very pleased with the way that the business is performing. I mean, clearly, we've had a terrific start to 2021. We outlined the results that we saw around the Super Bowl to acquire 350,000 customers in that week, which is more than we acquired in the preceding year. It was something which we're delighted about, I think for us, the fact that we continue to see such strong growth from some of our existing early states really gives us excitement about how big the opportunity can become for us. I'll let Jonathan pick up on the point around net revenue in the US, but there's a sort of mixed effects going on over there.
I mean, the only point I'd add to Peter's comment is, you know, we're not obsessing about CPAs. What we're obsessing about is CPA relative to LTV. And as we see, you know, we talked about the retention rates being 80% better than we see elsewhere in the world. That really does drive LTV, and therefore, you know, we're really happy with the LTV to CPA equation and those sort of paybacks. So, you know, and in states where there's, you know, greater products in terms of both sports betting and gaming, you're happy to see your CPAs go higher because your LTVs are higher. So, you know, I think that's the critical point for us, is about paybacks. On the second point, which is around cost of goods sold, I mean, obviously, you know, you get much higher cost of goods sold in terms of sports and casino with market access fees plus particularly taxes than you do on DFS. So as you see the mix going away from DFS towards sports and casino, you see that going up. You also see that, you know, some of these taxes are paid on GGR. So where we've got higher level of bonusing, particularly as states start up, you also see a boosted level. I mean, I think we'll just see what happens with the mix as we go through this year. But certainly, I think 2019 is less representative than 2020 in terms of cost of sales, cost of goods sold. So I'd probably look at 2020 as being a better proxy than 2019, that's for sure.
Perfect. Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, Peter.
Cheers, Gavin.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from the line of Michael Mitchell of Davy. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning both. Thanks for taking my questions. Two on the US if I could. First of all, just in terms of product, and clearly the importance of product leadership in the US is becoming more apparent, both at market level and I guess in your own numbers this morning in terms of share gains and customer retention. And I just wonder, could you comment on how your current US product compares to an average European product in terms of features, breadth of markets, et cetera, and really what the kind of the near term of the 2021 pipeline looks like from a kind of a product release perspective. So that's my first question. And then second of all, on your DFS activations, clearly still the key component of the customer acquisition funnel. I wonder, when you think about the reactivation since the return of sports, I wonder, could you just provide some color in terms of how the DFS customer base is evolving when you consider across states that already have live sports betting markets versus those to come in the future? Thank you.
Morning, Michael. Look, from a product perspective, you know, I think, you know, for those of you who are familiar with one of our products here, you know, in the UK or Ireland, I think you'd be you know, surprised when you saw you know, the product we have in the States. I think it, you know, it is you know, pretty well positioned. There's clearly more to do, but you know, we're pleased with the way in which we've managed to sort of integrate things like Same Game Parlay into the product, rather than, you know, and because we sort of own that product, it's fully built into the customer experience rather than sort of hanging out on the side, which often happens if you acquire this stuff from third parties. There is, you know, there's definitely some more work we need to do from a casino perspective, and you know, we have you know, the best casino product in the world as a result of, you know, the acquisition of the Stars Group. You know, we're really pleased with that casino platform, and so we'll be able to improve the casino product in the US, which, you know, as you'll have seen from our results, is an important component of the US market, and I think we've been really pleased and surprised actually at the extent to which we've been able to drive cross-sell in the US market around the casino. So look, there's more to do around sports and casino. The fact that we're getting, you know, the business onto our own tech end-to-end, you know, and it will be fully there by this coming football season, is something which will really help us accelerate our journey. And as a reminder for you, you know, whilst we are running the business on our own global betting platform, the US team have their own version of it. So they're able to make their own you know, bespoke developments to suit their market, but they can steal with pride from other divisions as well, which, you know, we think gives us a really sort of powerful platform for driving you know, fast innovation, you know, across the business. In terms of DFS, your point around sort of DFS aspirations, I haven't got the stats, and Jonathan may know, in terms of the differential between the performance of the DFS-sourced customers after the return to sport as opposed to the sort of new to franchise ones. You know, I'm not aware of any the differences off the top of my head, but, you know, one thing I would point out is, you know, we've actually been really pleased at the way in which we've been able to continue to grow and acquire customers onto the DFS platform. You know, our hypothesis when we acquired FanDuel was, you know, whilst we thought we'd see good growth in sports betting, we didn't think, you know, we'd be able to sort of maintain you know, the contribution and indeed the customer numbers around DFS. But you know, that, you know, we've been really, really pleased with the way that that business has continued to perform. And of course, today, it's still, you know, acting as a very, very significant source of customers for us from a, you know, in the States where we're live, and allows us to, you know, attract and acquire customers to the FanDuel brand in states in advance of them regulating.
Super. Many thanks.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. Your next call is coming from James Rowland Clark of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I just wondered if I could follow up on the safer gambling measures question from Ed earlier. So in your presentation, you say 40% of PPB customers have signed up to those measures. Is that a higher number for the UK? I assume it is. And do you have any targets about where you'll get to on those measures by the end of this year? And a sort of follow-up would be, at what point, or maybe you could remind us at what point you substantially put those measures in place for PPB customers. And then my second question is on the US. I think DraftKings said the other day that they're seeing about 50% cross-sell from sports betting to iGaming in their core states. Please could you let us know what yours is, and, you know, is that an area that you can improve in? You know, you're obviously holding sports betting market share at a very high level, but your iGaming share has slightly fallen. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, James. Look, you know, to be, you know, I think I've, you know, just make sure I'm sort of clear about the points I made with that earlier. You know, look, in the Sky bet business, you know, 40% of revenues are coming from customers with deposit limits in place, which, you know, we're really pleased with. But it's an ongoing journey for us. So, you know, the extent to which we can encourage more customers to put those limits in place, I think that would be a good thing. You know, through this COVID situation, we've had to be pretty nimble and change the way in which we monitor and assess customers. And, you know, there have been new guidelines from the Gambling Commission, which we've made sure we've adhered to. I think for us, what's really, really reassuring is that, you know, the Sky Bet and Paddy Power brands are, you know, actually very, very recreationally focused. So, you know, typically, you know, something like the, you know, Paddy Power brand, you'd be seeing customers spending, you know, for £10 a week, or the Sky Bet brands. And that's what I mean by that's a recreational punter. And I think, you know, those customers, you know, clearly the extent to which we can ensure they avail of our tools, you know, we'll encourage them to do so. You know, but if we ever get any sniff of them having any problems, we'll force them to do so. So we don't have specific targets. It's something that we're sort of thoughtful about, particularly around difference of age profiles of people. But, you know, we will continue to evolve and use, you know, data to help us assess how best to position ourselves. Jonathan, do you want to pick up on the...
In terms of cross-sell rates, I know that DK referred to a sort of 50% general cross-sell rate in their Q4 disclosure, and we'd be seeing something very similar to that across our business, so no discernible difference at all in those cross-sell rates.
Thank you very much. Sorry, just follow up on the safe gambling point, Peter. So if you're sending to anyone that's not recreational has already signed up to SG measures or the SG tools of some sort in the UK?
Look, we've got, you know, very extensive, you know, checks on customers, whether that's, you know, source of funds. You know, there's lots of enhanced diligence we do on sort of higher staking customers, and, you know, and I'll be surprised if, you know, for the customers who we've got, we, you know, we haven't had those checks. I mean, ultimately, I think it's important that there are some backstops in place to make sure we capture any customers who are spending too much. And that's, you know, as you know, the third part of our affordability sort of triple step. So, there may be some exceptions, but, you know, we will learn from those as we sort of pick them up through the third part of our affordability triple step.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Simon Davies of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, guys. Firstly, obviously, you reported a very strong start to the year. Can you give a rough view as to how much of that is down to abnormal gross win margins? That's my first.
You have any more questions, Simon?
Yeah, could you also give a feel for market share in Michigan, how that's performing, and how you see that as a benchmark in terms of market share on newly opening states?
In terms of the strong start, I mean, it's fair to say that the majority of this is driven by customer growth. Again, you know, continuing on from Q4, and we talked about, you know, some of the enhanced investment we have put into the business in specific areas to drive customer growth. So you should expect that the majority of that comes from that recreational customer growth. There is also a smaller element which is down to results. I'm not going to comment too specifically on results on a 7-week period, but the majority of it is down to customer growth.
Great.
And the market share number? I won't really comment on specific market shares in on a sort of state-by-state basis, but I think we're very pleased with our opening position in Michigan. I mean, we've only traded there recently, but, you know, the business is doing really well.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Richard Stuber of Numis. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning, basically. Just two questions for me, both in the US, please. I think on the presentation, you were talking about how you wanted to sort of improve from podium positions to sort of gold medal positions, and particularly in the US. Given you've got sort of 40% share in sports betting and 20% share in iGaming at the moment, what do you consider to be these sort of leading market shares which you need to keep in order to sort of keep that position? I think in the past you've mentioned that you expect some of those market shares to fall back a little bit. And the second question is, I was wondering whether you can give any sort of colour around difference of behaviour, customer sort of spending behaviours across different states where you're entering, you know, in terms of spend per head and sort of your duration on your app and that type of thing. Any colour on any sort of differences would be great. Thank you.
Hi, Richard. Look, I mean, I'm pleased that someone watched the presentation. I thought it might have just been my mum. But, you know, look, it is true. We are sort of refining our ambition in America from wanting to have a podium position to being on that top slot, you know, the gold medal. We have got that at the moment. You know, let's be really clear. We are number one in America. And I think, you know, to have been able to post a year where our revenues we're 1.4 times that of our next nearest competitor. In fact, we're greater than players 2 and 3 combined. Gives us a comfortable top step position on the podium or gold medal. We'd like to stay there. How that sort of evolves in terms of the market shares that we need to have from a sports and gaming perspective, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think as you know, we've never necessarily targeted an absolute percentage sort of market share figure in either sports or gaming, but what we try to do is to acquire as much business as we can at very specific and good CPAs. We think we have a real advantage around the quality of our DFS business for cross-selling, which gives us customer acquisition advantages, and we think the quality of our product is really helping drive improved levels of retention on the business, and, you know, and all those things, you know, together with, you know, better than expected levels of cross-selling to gaming, you know, have led us to having higher customer values than we anticipated. So, you know, that gives us the confidence and conviction to keep investing hard in customer acquisition, and you know, you can see the results of that with the figures we released around the Super Bowl. I mean, Jonathan, I don't know whether you want to sort of give some colour around the different states, but, you know, look, they are all a little bit different with different partners. And that means you get sort of different starting points with them. But there are a couple of points on that. You know, obviously there's different spend rates depending on the products that are on offer, depending on the GDP per state, and obviously some of the wealthier states we're seeing, greater spend. I think the one thing we're seeing, I think possibly because there's more marketing dollars going into each state, is an acceleration of the speed of uptick. And actually, in the early states, it's much slower than certainly what we've seen in the most recent states of, Virginia and Michigan. So I think the adoption curve is getting steeper, and we intend to be at the start and investing, you know, aggressively to, you know, build those leading positions. I mean, I think it's fair to say when we first came out with the numbers with a market share of around 40% in sports betting. We said, I think 2 years ago, we expect this to fall back. I think we said the same thing a year ago. So look, we'll hold on as long as we can to this position, but we just want to be ahead of, you know, the next competitor. I think just coming back, sorry, to the previous question, in Michigan, I think we are number one with about 28% of handle, just to come back on that one. So look, I think, you know, we're very pleased where we are. It's a state-by-state battle, and we'll pick and choose our fights very carefully and make sure that overall we remain number one in that market.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. So just to remind people on the telephone, if you wish to ask a question, please key *1 on your keypad. So that's *1 on your keypad. Your next question is coming from the line of Joe Thomas of HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just a couple of questions, please, on the regulatory side of things. One is Germany and the mention that you make about the potential turnover tax there. I just wanted to understand if that had any sort of mitigating actions in it, and what mitigating actions might look like in response to such taxes, were they imposed, be they Germany or frankly elsewhere. And the second thing was just mindful again of this affordability issue. I'm just wondering if there's anything you can help us with in terms of the skew of sports betting customers, you know, and sports betting towards the particularly higher spending elements. I mean, it's in the industry, it's obviously skewed, gaming is skewed towards higher spending elements. I'm just wondering to what extent that's also reflected in sports.
Okay, Jay. Jonathan, do you want to take Joe's first?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Germany, there's a range of actions that we need to take. First of all, we'll continue our lobbying efforts in advance of the decisions around, I think, 1st of July timing. We're not overly hopeful that we can change this because obviously the tax is greater than the revenue generated. We need to be very careful in understanding exactly how this is defined when it's put into legislation to really understand precisely, you know, what the tax relates to. And, you know, we also need to look very carefully at the different products which we have within our portfolio, you know, the different poker products we've got for, you know, tournaments versus just, you know, the live games. And obviously then, you know, consider whether there's ways to mitigate that. The issue, I think, Joe, becomes where we've got an offshore competitor who will offer greater value to competitors. So any of our mitigating actions will have to be put into that context. And I think we already see some shift in player activity when one looks at Google searches offshore, and we would expect that to grow reasonably exponentially as if this tax were to come in.
And Joe, look, in terms of your sort of questions around sort of affordability and the skew, you know, we clearly with, you know, Paddy Power and Skybet have the two you know, market leaders from a recreational perspective in the UK from a sports betting perspective, which we think sets us up, you know, really well in the UK market. And, you know, we're really pleased with the way in which those businesses continue to take share in 2020. And indeed, you know, you just need to look at what happened with the customers who are migrating from retail to online. You know, these are customers who, you know, habitual, pretty small staking customers. You know, we do have 5% of the shops, you know, with the Paddy Power brand, but we believe we captured 40% of that business when those customers went online. And we think there's a better, you know, better value, you know, things like generosity that we offer those customers will keep them on our platform even when shops reopen. So yeah, I think, you know, we are a very recreational business. You know, it's true in the UK and as it is in Australia with our sportswear business. And I think, you know, that's an important area of focus for us to keep growing those you know, average monthly players. And that's why we shared the figures with you and, you know, why we're so pleased with the performance that we saw, you know, in last year. And, you know, as Jonathan shared with you, you know, that's what's driving this year's performance as well.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from James Wheatcroft of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Good morning to you both. Given the scale and scope of the US business, what prospects are there perhaps potentially for a dual listing in the US? Are there any circumstances when you would consider spinning out the FanDuel business firstly? And secondly, in terms of UK regulation, do you have any thoughts on the sort of direction of travel and maybe the timetable for the current review, please?
Yeah, hi, James. Look, in terms of that sort of, you know, your last question, the point around the timetable in the UK, I mean, look, we're all aware of what the government's published timetable is. I don't know whether the sort of ongoing COVID pandemic will, you know, potentially sort of derail us or not, but, you know, we're preparing to sort of submit all of our evidence to them, and yeah, I think, you know, we're really pleased with the approach that the government seems to be taking around this evidence-led approach, and, you know, we'll do everything we can to engage with them and share with them the insights that we get from, you know, what's frankly a very good ability to sort of review what's going on across the UK market. In terms of the US, look, you know, as you say, you know, the scale and scope of our US business is very impressive. We believe we have the premium asset in the US market, and, you know, we're very proud of that. We've worked hard over the last few years to build out that capability, and, you know, we are number one in America, and there's not many British businesses that can state that. Yeah, and I think, look, the way in which we've been able to build out those capabilities in America is by, you know, really leveraging a lot of our group capabilities to support America. So it's not just the funding that we've been able to give to the team in FanDuel, which has obviously been a very important component of our ability to drive customer acquisition hard. You know, hundreds of our colleagues from around the world have helped support that, you know, and build out and develop the FanDuel business, whether that's with expertise and as a sports betting from a marketing standpoint, or the fact that we're sort of using our global risk and trading capability, which has got sort of 650 people pricing product globally, which is a very important component of why we have the best product in America. I mean, the other point I'd also highlight is, the Americans are leveraging our global betting platform, which is a very important aspect of our strategy. The fact that we have many of our divisions using the same platform, which allows us to sort of share development across the group, but at the same time also push decision making down close to the customer end, I think is really important for us.
Very helpful, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from the line of Kiranjot Grewal of Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning. Just two questions from me. Firstly, could we get a little bit more color on the performance of the other US brands from the Fox and the TVG and how they've done over 2020? How valuable has that cross-sell been between the brands? And then secondly, Australia's performing incredibly well despite fewer lockdown restrictions. Should we be thinking of more resilient performance in Australia versus that was being guided towards the end of 2020? Thank you.
Yeah, look, I commented on Fox earlier in terms of how pleased we are with the way in which we've acquired, so many customers onto the Super 6 platform, and I think that's been a very important component to that business, and we'll set up that business well for the future. It's, to have nearly 4.5 million actives on the Super 6 is tremendous. Look, the TVG business has performed well during the course of the year. We've benefited from the shift of a lot of business from retail to online, and that's helped grow that business very successfully. We're really pleased with the market share performance of that business. It's not yet integrated fully into the FanDuel ecosystem. As and when it is, I think we believe that we'll get some considerable cross-selling benefits from it. But at the moment, that's more sort of tangential. In Australia, you're right to highlight the fact that they've come out of this lockdown ahead of the rest of the world, and we're watching very carefully what happens as customers there are able to go back and enjoy some of the sort of channels that they weren't able to previously, most particularly sort of retail. Early evidence seems to be that customers are enjoying the generosity and superior product that they're getting on the sports bet business. Undoubtedly, there's going to be some shift in spend away from wagering into other forms of leisure activity. But we're really pleased with the way in which the Australian team performed in 2020. To have migrated the BetEase business in less than 90 days is incredible under full lockdown. And the way in which the business is currently trading, we're very comfortable with. And the only point to add on Foxtrot is obviously those 4.4 million are spread across the U.S. in a lot of states, so we can only mine that base in terms of sports betting in the states in which Foxtrot is live. So that restricts the ability to cross sell at this point. But obviously, it's a great funnel, but it's a relatively long term funnel.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Christine Zhu of RBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, yes, good morning both. I have a couple of questions on the US as well, if I may. Firstly, you mentioned in the presentation that you're refining your state opening playbook. So I just wondered if that's changed at all recently, any surprises or learnings from recent openings, or is it mostly, you referred, alluded earlier to the quicker adoption in later states, is it mostly that, or is there anything else as well? And my second question is just regarding the 1.8 times retention rate in the US versus the UK. I suppose as the market matures and other players probably improve their products, do you think that there are any structural reasons why US consumers might be stickier in the longer term than European counterparts? And I guess suppose I'm referring to more outside FanDuel specific positives in terms of keeping customers engaged. Thank you.
Morning, Christine. Look, in terms of your point about refining the reference remains to refining state opening, we think we're getting better at it. The more we practice, the better we get. Whether that's with opportunities to try and sort of pre-register customers, or make sure that we have all the rights of local influencers and partners signed up to make a splash when we go live. Those are all things which are important components of our strategy. Clearly, we're not going to give away too many of our trade secrets, but we think that as time has gone by, we've got better and better at launching live in states. And in fact, the fact that we own our platform end to end allows us to offer differential opportunities and deals for customers, and some of the spread the love campaigns and things have been very successful for us as time's gone by in new state openings.
And obviously the only thing to add there is we are looking at making improvements to our product and platform over 2021. We'd expect to be migrated across from IGT onto the global betting platform by the start of the next NFL season, which will give us greater depth of markets, greater resilience, greater speed for the customers. And on top of the new account and wallet, which was launched in 2020, we think that'll set us up to hopefully be able to prosecute our advantage in terms of product on the sports betting side. And Peter's referred to some improvements that we'll be making on the casino side.
Yeah, and then look, in terms of the differential performance we see from a retention perspective, the market's pretty well competed already. I mean, I don't think there's anyone who's operating in America who hasn't, gone out aggressively and said they want to sort of take a big market share, and that people are throwing a lot of promotional generosity around. So it is well competed. I think the one major difference in the US compared with what we'd see in a lot of markets in Europe is the number of sort of hoops and hurdles you have to get through from a registration perspective. People are having to supply their social security details, and which we think could lead to people having a smaller number, sort of active customers having a smaller number of products than we see in other markets. And so that may be one of the things that's helping improve and drive retention rates. But I think the biggest impact actually is that we've got the best product in the market. And what we've seen time and time again, whether that's with our business in Skybet or Sportsbet, or the changes we've seen in Paddy Power, indeed the investments we're putting into PokerStars, is you've got to have the best product in the market. And we think we've got the best product in the market with FanDuel. The same game parlay product is pretty unique in the market, certainly the way it's integrated. We've got the best breadth and depth of products. We've been operating we're now operating two states alone, full end-to-end tech stack, which gives us much bigger sort of, you know, resilience and advantages compared to using third parties. And, you know, so we think all those things are important components to sort of continue to drive the retention rates as high as they are.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is coming from Ivor Jones of Peel Hunt. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. I just wanted to ask about the implications for the exchange of what you said about the international business taking PokerStars as its principal brand. It, obviously, exchange didn't grow nearly as strongly as sports in the second half of last year. Is this a legacy product now in runoff globally to be overtaken by fixed odds betting? How important is the international part of that, the ex-UK part of that? And secondly, is it possible to have a gold medal position in Australia if Flutter doesn't own a Tabcorp wagering business? And what are the implications for the group if a more capable international business does own that Tabcorp business in the future? Thank you.
So, morning, Ivor. Look, it's a good question around sort of the impact on the exchange. So there are some sort of technical reasons why the growth is a bit slower in the second half of the year. But the fact that we are focusing on the PokerStars brand in international markets doesn't mean that we are not going to continue to push Betfair, you know, where it's appropriate to do so. And I think, you know, we referenced in the presentation that, you know, whether that's sort of Latin America or Spain, you know, the Betfair, you know, business has sort of good traction and will continue to use it there. I see no reason why, you know, we can't continue to invest into the exchange business, and it's something that we are doing, right now. And there's some, you know, enhancements that are due to be launched to improve the quality of the products on the exchange, which, you know, frankly, has lagged behind a little bit. And I think, you know, if we look at the, you know, if we actually stripped out some of the switch offs we'd undertaken in the exchange in, you know, prior year, you know, the underlying performance was actually quite good in the second half of the year. So I certainly wouldn't characterise the exchange as a sort of sunset product. It's something which, you know, we know is very important, and, you know, we're investing in it, and we'd like to continue to see that business grow. Look, in Australia, we started out as the challenger. The business has, you know, gone from strength to strength year after year. We continue to grow incredibly well. We offer, you know, brilliant experience. We've got a fantastic brand, and customers, you know, seem to continue to enjoy betting with Sportsbet. And so, you know, look, gold medals are important to us, and having that sort of top position on the podium, I can't comment on what may or may not happen to the tab in Australia, but, you know, we're really pleased with the way that Australia, Sportsbet performed last year for us in 2020. I think the team did a terrific job in execution. To have done that integration in less than 90 days and everyone was working from home, I think was astounding, particularly with all the product enhancements that they delivered for the sports betting customers, you know, the introduction of streaming and things. I'm really pleased with where we are in Australia, and we're investing hard to keep our business growing. John, I don't know if you got anything to add on either of those.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, look, thank you very much, everybody. Unfortunately, we are sort of coming up against it now from a time perspective. But very much appreciate all your questions. Sorry we were having to do this on the phone yet again, but at some point we'll see you in 3D. Hopefully in the summer. Thank you all very much.
Thanks all.